On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Leafs fans aren't even allowed to talk about it without somebody in red bursting in the room, oh, but who won? And you're like, okay,
very true.
I got it.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
Hello and welcome to Tall Can Audio. I am Michaela. He is Matt. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Having a little tech issue over here before we get fired up, but I'm good now. I'm ready to rock.
Yeah, Siri's great till she stops listening to you.
Honest to God.
Well, let's get... I assume that you're in dire need of a drink. Uh-huh. What are you drinking today?
This is the... And as I read the title, I can only think to pronounce it one way. So if you'll excuse me for one second. Sprokvik. And it is
nice.
Spelled S-P-R-O space V-K-I-E-K. That is from Ridge Rock Brewing Company, where you sent me at the end of last week's show. They say it is a lagered ale that they say very drinkable and very light. So... I don't know. In the winter, I normally don't go in for the very light, but I wanted to try something new when I was doing the Ridge Rock delivery thing. So I grabbed a couple that I hadn't had before, and this was one of them. So that's what we're rolling with tonight. It's a 5.1% alcohol. They say it's comparable to a Central European lager. So we'll see what that's all about. How about yourself?
Well, first of all, let me just say that is a great beer. Mm. I've had the Sprokvik, if I'm pronouncing it right, several times, and it's super, super tasty. So excellent choice, my friend. Mm-hmm. I, coincidentally, am also going with a Ridge Rock beer. Wait for it. Oh, I figured, you know, I'm going to practice what I preach. Last week, I sent you to Ridge Rock, told you to buy some beer there. You did. Good for you. a couple days later, I thought, you know what? I should probably do the same. I was in need of a Ridge Rock beer. I'm going with the Ridge Rock Blonde today.
Okay.
And I find their blonde to be one of the best blondes on the market.
Me
in
too.
Terms of
yep.
just like it's easy drinking. It's,
I grabbed a couple, you know, of those as well. Yeah, they're in the fridge.
Yeah, like. Yeah. Especially for hockey season, like when it's a Thursday and the Sens are playing, I want to crack a couple of beers, but not feel like I'm going to die tomorrow.
Right.
It's such a great beer for that. And it's a genuinely great beer. So I'm going with a bit of a ye olde faithful today, and that's okay. The Ridge Rock Blonde.
I like it.
For the record, I ordered so much beer from them, they sent me a free hat.
I guess I didn't order enough beer.
Yeah, apparently that's the thing. I didn't.
I had 12 tall boys and... Yeah, six of the short guys. I got, I know it's one of your favorites. Is it the Simcoe IPA?
Yeah, Simcoe's really good. Did you get the Pebbles and Marbles?
No, it was sold out when I was on there. They must have come back
they,
on.
They just released a new batch. That's a great beer as well, but the Simcoe IPA is delicious.
Okay, well, that might be next week's selection. Like I said, I have a bunch of stuff from them to try now, so.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Their APA as well is, and again, like I hate to sound like a broken record here, but it's one of the best APAs on the market.
Well, and I tried a bunch of their stuff over the summer. They had one at the time and I've been looking for it ever since, but they haven't brought it back. At least any of the days I've been on there was their Murphy's Irish Red. It was really nice. I really like their amber as well. They have an American stout that I bought a couple of, so lots of great stuff out of there, that I'm looking forward to cracking back into here, but bring back the Murphy's Irish Red if you're listening.
Yeah. Hey, hint, hint, Ridge Rock, let's go.
Is it Murphy's or O'Brien's now that I think about it? Might have been O'Brien's. I think it's the O'Brien's Irish Red.
Yeah.
Bring that back.
You sold me on Murphy's.
Well, I just brought it with such conviction.
Yeah, Ridge Rock, a solid, solid brewery for anybody in the West End, but I think they deliver to anywhere in Ottawa.
Yep.
They're one of the few breweries that deliver to my house for free. So I'm a big fan for various reasons. All right. We have some sports to talk about because sports are back. Full-fledged. Last weekend was almost like a sports overload between the NFL postseason, the NHL really getting going, and obviously the NBA well in full swing right now. I didn't have enough screens in my house to watch it all, Matt. Let's start with the elephant in the room, and that is the Sens beat the Leafs on night one. But Friday night, Sens actually walked away with a win, surprising everybody, including myself. And then Saturday, there was no game.
Funny that. Just wiped out somehow. Didn't even make it on the TV here in Ottawa.
It's kind of like how in 2007, no one won the Stanley Cup. It's crazy. No, the Leafs won. The Sens and Leafs split their weekend series 1-1, which like I'm not just saying this to be like a crappy Sens fan, but as a Sens fan, I was pleasantly surprised and chalked that one up to a win. Because the sheer fact that this team walked away not 0-2 was a miracle. And you know what? Like aside from Saturday night, they played okay. What were your thoughts on opening weekend?
Aside from Saturday night, so aside from half of the series they played, I've sworn to myself no hard opinions. Like you can make observations and enjoy the games and whatever, but no hard opinions on the team until at least five games in. And the Leafs are now five games in. The split in Ottawa was part of that. Kind of a sloppy win against Montreal on Wednesday was part of that. A nice win, uneventful against Winnipeg, and then a pretty dog's breakfast of a game against Edmonton. The whole thing with the Leafs, I'm not sure yet what to make of them. I was impressed with the Senators, the way they bogged down in the third period against, like, Toronto, I think, only had four shots in the Friday night game against Ottawa in the third, so Ottawa defended really well there, and Toronto couldn't get much going. Saturday, I thought Toronto played about how you would expect them to, and that looked more like, I think, what I would have predicted. The Winnipeg game Monday was nice, right? Like, it's nice that there's no crazy comeback for either team. There's nothing ridiculous happening. The Leafs never just lose. They always lose spectacularly. And this was a win with nothing spectacular in it. So early thoughts on the Leafs are, you know, just kind of, all right, like, there's some stuff that's okay there. That top line had been dominant. The fourth line has been awful, and the second and third line have just kind of been okay so far. So maybe that's to be expected this early on. What about your team? Kind of what are your early returns on them? I guess three games in.
Well, for context, during one of the intermissions on Tuesday night, the panel was talking about the playoff hopes for the Sens.
Already?
So clearly no one's going over the top and making grand assumptions early on. You know what? Like, okay, so Friday and Saturday were what they were. It was surprising to get the win on Friday. The Sens played like absolute garbage on Saturday, did not deserve to win at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had a really nice moment of Tim Stützle's first goal, which was an absolute beauty.
Great shot. Yep.
Oh, just one timer of a bouncing puck. Just chef's kiss. Beauty.
Who won that game again?
I don't want to talk about it.
Because Sens fans have done this thing for 4 years, whenever Matthew's four-goal debut comes up, where Leafs fans aren't even allowed to talk about it without somebody in red bursting in the room, but who won? And you're like, okay,
that's very true.
I got it.
That's very right? true.
So from now on, whenever Tim Stützle's first ever NHL goal comes up, this is how it has to be returned. I'm sorry. It's just
you have a counter-argument. You've earned it. That's fair.
Me personally, I've earned it. I did a lot of work on that.
Yes. Definitely. The Tuesday night game against Winnipeg was, I mean, the first two periods were spectacular. The Sens were actually, like, I think they had 10 shots in the first 5 minutes. They finished with a total of, I think, 40 shots on net. Mm-hmm. It was all in all a good game minus, you know, the last 5 minutes.
Power play looked really nice for Ottawa.
The power play went 2-5, yeah. Which, by the way, this power play has been stagnant for literal years at this point. So even just the fact that the power play is producing, but also moving the puck well, I thought was really promising. You know, the last 5 minutes were unfortunate. They were up 3-2. Winnipeg ties it in the dying seconds. They end up going to overtime. Winnipeg wins. Mm-hmm. A lot of people chalked it up. There's been a lot of discussion about the young mistakes, but it was all veterans on the ice when Winnipeg scored the tying goal.
Yeah.
The decisions of who DJ Smith put, we always do this. I'm going to do it, but we always do this. We rip coaches apart for their choice of who they put out there in the 3-on-3 overtime.
Right.
I think Derek Stepan was out there at one point. Like, that didn't make any sense to me. Why wouldn't you have, you know, Drake Batherson was having a great game. Nick Paul has looked really good. Obviously, Thomas Chabot should just be out there the whole time. He doesn't need a rest. but like we always
Anisimov
do this.
Anisimov was out there.
Anisimov was out there. Like, what the? Okay.
Why were you even in the lineup, let alone out there in 3-on-3? Yeah.
That's been the biggest controversy for the Sens so far this year is the lineup choices, right? Yep. Colin White being a scratch night one, Colin White only playing a few minutes when he is in the game, Anisimov getting time, which doesn't really make sense. But like, the bar is pretty low for the Sens this year, but all in all, I've been pretty happy with what I've seen so far because you're getting great production and I think just growth from players like Nick Paul mm-hmm. and Drake Batherson, who we've been waiting for a long time to really kind of explode onto the scene and be the players they're going to be. And I feel like we're at that place with these two players. I think it was Ray Ferraro it was Craig Button. Sorry.
Yep.
He compared Drake Batherson to Mark Stone.
Oh,
which
let's easy
like in the moment I was like, okay, don't do that.
Yeah.
But then I'm not saying Drake Batherson is anywhere near Mark Stone, but there are little flashes of his game that remind me a lot of a really young Mark Stone when he first started playing on the team. He's very good on takeaways.
Yeah.
He's got such great protection of the puck and just an energy about him that I find has the potential to make the players around him a lot better. He's just looking really good.
Was it not the Friday night game against Toronto on the power play where he just walked out of the corner and found Chabot? Like, he was driving to the net and then just went, oh, sweet, and made this awesome pass. I believe it was the Friday game. And you're like, man, look at that guy, right? The confidence on him to make that play, passing it through the box like that was incredible. And I've to me, Batherson has been really noticeable in comparison to the last couple times he's been brought up or – you know, trotted out there. He does look like he's kind of turned a corner. Nick Paul, to me, looks better than the last couple times we've seen him. I have a hard time believing that this pace is sustainable for him, where he's suddenly this game-changing force out there. But I do think he is finally establishing himself as a regular NHL player, maybe kind of third line, which is fine, right? You need those guys, and that's what he's playing now. But this thing where he has looked dominant at times in multiple games, to me, I don't know that is sustainable. It's still really early, right? Like,
yeah, that you're right. I think Drake Batherson is probably the more likely candidate to be what he's been so far permanently. I'm just really happy to see something from Nick Paul. Nick Paul is one of those, much like Logan Brown, who unfortunately is not playing with the big club right now. You know, the two of them have been in this weird kind of purgatory for the last couple of years in Sens prospect land, where they're not quite full-time players. When they are, they don't get a lot of minutes. You don't see them a lot. They're not used a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And then they keep getting relegated down to the AHL. Whereas I feel like you can't justify either of those players leaving the Sens right now, in my opinion. Like, they are here to stay. Yeah. And I'm just happy to finally see that, especially with Drake Batherson, because to your point of his play to Chabot, like, things are finally looking effortless for him.
Yeah.
Whereas in the last couple of years, you know, there have been times where he's looked really good, but then there have been times where it just looks like he's struggling so much to make anything happen, right? Like, it's difficult for him out there.
Sure.
And now he looks like an NHL player. He looks like someone who belongs there. He looks like he knows what he's doing. He's got calmness and confidence in his game. And, you know, that takes a long time to develop, both physically and mentally. I think that's probably one of the biggest things for Batherson over the last couple of years has just been like, you have to believe you belong there to act like it, right?
Certainly.
And when you're getting sent down and kind of bouncing all over the place, you know, what does that do to your confidence who knows?
And when you do get your chance, who are you playing with, right? Did they throw you in on the fourth line and ask you to, you know, make some magic there? Or right now he's finally getting to play with some guys that can make plays with him, right? So I agree. He looks way different than the last time we saw him, and that's upsetting to me.
I can't, you know what? It can't be easy. I understand the frustration. What were your thoughts? I know that it's the Leafs and we do this all the time, but there was a goalie controversy as of Saturday. What are your thoughts on, first of all, Aaron Dell getting picked up on waivers by the Devils and the goalie scenario, I'll call it, with the Leafs right now?
I didn't think Fred was playing great, but I wasn't yet on the goalie controversy plane. It was insane to think after two games. First of all, there's always October Freddy, right? He never has great starts. There was no camp. There was nothing. Now, at the same time, on Friday night, Matt Murray, without a camp and without whatever, was, to me, playing better than Freddy. So it's not a blanket excuse, but I just wasn't ready to buy in yet. Jack Campbell played well on Saturday night, but he also faced like half the significant scoring chances that Freddie did the night before. So I just wasn't ready to bite yet. Monday night, Freddie played pretty well against Winnipeg. The one goal that Connors scored, you'd go, maybe I'd like to get a save there, but he's been asked to move across the crease. It gets under his arm, and that's a shooter, right? Kyle Connor, he can make goalies look. So I didn't think much of that. And then the game on Wednesday, he was fine again. One's a crappy bounce that goes in off somebody's skate, and then Draisaitl beats him on the power play. So Fred's been fine. He hasn't been great. And to me, there is no goalie controversy. The Aaron Dell thing, the only thing I will say, and I'm actually a little sour you brought this up because it's going to make me sound whiny. The waivers thing for a guy who just signed with a team is rough. If you have put in your time and become a free agent and less than a week into the season, some team gets go, nah, fuck you. I don't care where you signed. You come play for us now. That's rough, right? Those are the rules. So the Leafs lose. They lose their guy, and so be it. But for Aaron Dell, who, if I'm going to play for League Min, I'd like to pick where I'm going to play and try and get my chance in Toronto. And then New Jersey just gets to go, yeah, no, I don't really care what you want in the contract. Like, those are the rules, but it just seems, you know, like, that's rough. I just signed a free agent contract. We haven't even played a week yet, and I'm moving again. So I don't really have a beef with it. I just think it's probably a little rough on him and his family and however that works. But the Devils, with Corey Crawford retiring during training camp, you know, obviously suddenly found themselves needing a guy, and he was probably the best available on waivers. So they made their move, and so be it. And here we are, one injury away from Michael Hutchinson playing minutes for the Toronto Maple Leafs again. That doesn't excite me.
I will say that the Corey Crawford retirement, like, it completely changed the goalie trajectory for the year.
All over the place. All of a sudden, like, anybody
it,
going
it
on
had with ripple effects.
Yeah, Edmonton puts Forsberg on, I guess it was Carolina took him, and then they put somebody on waivers, Winnipeg took that. Like, all of a sudden, it just started this domino effect of, oh, man, right? Like, now everybody's trying to claim goal. And I bet you the Leafs will do the same. The next time somebody they think is half decent makes their way through waivers, they're going to have to grab somebody to, you know, and this is now just going to sort of continue. There are not 93 great goalies out there, so when one shakes loose, if you're mandated like you are right now to carry three, this is going to keep happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting year for that for sure. Yeah. And that one move, Corey Crawford retiring, really did change the goalie makeup and, you know, ultimately resulted in Aaron Dell being picked up.
Yep.
So not the greatest situation for the Leafs for sure, but yeah, I'm with you. There's no goalie controversy. Like, this is just typical Toronto media being Toronto media, and you know, anytime there's anything to talk about, you're right, Freddie Anderson is who he is in October.
Yep.
And this is October
it is
right now.
Yep.
Right, he's and to that point, he is who he is in the playoffs, and this is what you get with Freddie. He has slow starts to the season, he settles down, then the playoffs start, and he's, you know, back to.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, like he's sort of he's Freddie. The thing about Freddie, to be totally honest with you, he had a rotten 2018 series against Boston. In 2019, he was fine. Did he step up and steal it for us? No, but he wasn't the issue. And in 2020, his numbers against Columbus in the bubble there were really good. But there's one or two that kind of dip on him and you go, nah, or he just kind of misses. You're like, oh, man, like, but his numbers are fine. He's wearing that 2018 still where I think in game one, we got blown out like something stupid, like 7-2 or something ridiculous like that. And the game seven meltdown and everything that goes into that. Freddie in the playoffs has not stolen us a series. He's never been great, but it's really only that one in 2018 where you go, you know, like that was brutal. And he's kind of stuck wearing that now until he can steal us one. And so far he hasn't shown us he can do that. So we'll see.
It also doesn't help when your team is shooting something like, I don't know, 1%.
Their shooting percent in the bubble was insanely low, like record settingly low.
And then the playoffs, like in the previous playoff series, either your stars weren't performing or were being underused by a certain head coach.
Yeah. Patty Marleau playing 20 minutes a night.
And Austin Matthews sitting on the bench.
Yes.
Like, great come
call.
On, man.
Great call.
And I'm definitely not of the mindset that, like, okay, if I'm a Leafs fan, I don't feel overly confident with Frederick Anderson going into the playoffs. But at the same time, none of this has been solely his fault.
That's right. And that's all my point is. I'm not sitting here going, we're good because Freddie's going to steal this for us the way I was when I was young, like Cujo might steal one for us or Belfour might steal one for. I don't have that feeling with Freddie Anderson, but I'm also realistic enough about it to just go, I don't know what any of these guys are going to do. So let's find out. And that's sort
one,
of.
Not to make everything about the Sens, but I'm going to make everything about the Sens. One player who has like pleasantly surprised me and like surprise might not even be a strong enough word, but Matt Murray has played like incredibly good so far. And like, I know it's only three games, but he was exactly the kind of goalie the Sens needed, especially on Friday night. He looked really good. I know the Leafs were held to something like 21 shots or something like that. But Saturday night, it could have been a lot worse. The Leafs had 40 shots on net and the Sens only walked away down 3 goals. Mm-hmm. That is a successful evening, if you ask me. He again looked good against Winnipeg. I'm not going to blame him for the late game goal. I've been pleasantly surprised with Matt Murray. Like again, three games in, I know a lot can happen, but if we get somewhere around this kind of performance for the rest of the season, I think the Sens have lucked out with their choice of Matt Murray.
I completely agree with that. He's, you know, all those excuses that I made for Freddie, no camp and it's October Freddie and all these things, you throw them out the window when you put him up against Connor Hellebuck, who looks fantastic. He doesn't care that there's been no camp. Matt Murray doesn't appear to care that there's been no camp. So there are goalies out there that are battling through it, and Matt Murray is one of them. I thought he was really good in the times he was tested on Friday, and then as you said, on Saturday the Leafs carried the play for especially the top line for the majority of the game, and Murray was there, made some great saves. And the biggest thing, it wasn't even so much the like spectacular saves or anything like that, it was just that he looked steady. And if you have a young team like that, if your goalie looks calm and can just settle it down, grab it, take a whistle when you need to, just make a save that maybe is a little bit beyond routine, still look routine, I think that settles down a young team. And if Matt Murray, look, they're my thoughts on the Sens and that they were going to finish last this year still stand. It's early, but they look far more competitive than I expected that they would. And if Matt Murray is going to look like this, again, it's early, but if he's going to look like this all year, then maybe they're not a seventh place team. Maybe they can get by a Winnipeg who's looked kind of weak so far, or who knows who it might be, right? Like he can bring confidence to that team knowing that, okay, things are taken care of in our end. Just don't make any crazy mistakes, and he's going to be there to clean it up. I think he's looked really good.
Yeah, I've been very happy with what I've seen from Matt Murray. Listen, like all in all, I've been pretty happy with the Sens overall. Like I'm again, my expectations were low, but we've gotten to see Tim Stützle score his first NHL goal. Josh Norris score his first NHL goal. We've seen like consistent good performances from Drake Batherson and Nick Paul.
Yep.
Brady Tkachuk is Brady Tkachuk. Thomas Chabot is Thomas Chabot. No, like everything we expect to get out of those players, we've gotten out of those players so far, which has been great. And I fully expect things to settle down and this all to go off the rails at some point this season. But if we can get some entertaining hockey where there's a couple good takeaways from each game in terms of the development of these players, I think Sens fans can be pretty happy.
Yeah, and that thing that happened on Tuesday against Winnipeg, that's going to happen again because it's a young team, right? Like you're going to play a hard-nosed game. It's going to be tight. It's going to be entertaining. You're going to get right down to the end. And the team with more experience and probably a little bit more firepower is going to find a way to pull it out while those young kids are kind of left going, all right, there's a lesson I needed to learn or that I could have done that better or that differently. I think those are going to keep happening. But the Senators are far more irritating to play against than they have been in the past. And they're not just going to give you the 2 points like has been the case maybe for the last year or two. You're going to have to go in and you're going to have to take them. And to me, that's, you know, that's a credit to what they have so far.
And that's all I asked for. A couple weeks ago when I said, what do I expect from the season? I wanted them to make it difficult for other teams. Yep. And if that's what the season has to be, so be it. I'm very much okay with it. As we record this on Thursday night, the Sens are facing off against Winnipeg tonight.
Yes.
And we'll see, and hopefully they don't let a lead go late in the game. But Winnipeg is a team that has not lived up to expectations so far. As I'm looking at the lineups right now, I believe there's no expectations for Patrick Laine to suit up. I think he's still out. Mm-hmm. So you know, this is a team where the Sens have to take advantage of I get a little tired of, and we're going to keep talking about this throughout the season, but there's been a lot of like, oh, it's a tired team, you know, coming in, travel, blah, blah, blah. They took a 45-minute flight from Winnipeg to, apparently it's only a 45-minute flight. Did not know that. you know, they played back-to-back. Back-to-backs happened last year.
Sure.
And have happened forever. Like, this is not an anomaly, right? Like, I feel like every game we've watched so far, there's been some sort of storyline of like, oh, this team's tired. Like,
I was so miffed. The same reason Wednesday night, people saying, ah, oh, they just look tired, the Leafs and Oilers. And go, this was the Oilers' first road game of the season, and the only travel the Leafs have done was to Ottawa and back. Enough, right? If this is about being tired, then get ready, because that's what this whole season's going to friggin' look like, right, is 3-4 and all these sorts of things. Maybe they are, but enough with the excuses, because everyone is playing the same condensed schedule and these baseball-style series in the same town. I don't want to hear about it, right? And there's no doubt in my mind that as the season goes on, they will be tired. But so will the opponent. So just chill, right?
Exactly. And speaking of storylines that don't exactly live up to the expectations, you referred to it as a dog's breakfast against Edmonton. But oh my God, have I ever been more disappointed in a game during the regular season? I don't know.
That was on NBC on Wednesday night. That was supposed to be the big marquee game. Matthews and Marner versus McDavid and Draisaitl, and just... oh my God, it was terrible.
The first goal goes off Jake Muzzin's skate.
Yes.
And that sets the tone for the entire game.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you're going to get.
It was awful. Oh,
well, I'll be completely honest with you. I didn't even finish it. I couldn't. It was so boring.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. And Dave Tippett there stood up on Thursday at his press conference for the media and said, all offseason I heard that Toronto and Edmonton needed to improve their defense, and now that we played a good defensive game, everybody hates it. And like, you got to have some big brass ones to try and sell us on the fact that that was two teams playing this chess match defensive style. That was two teams just playing terribly. Like, that wasn't great defensive execution. That was just, oh, bad hockey. And I guess you can try and sell it however you want, and Edmonton's full value for the win, but man, what a brutal game.
Yeah, it's not often that I sit down to watch a Toronto Maple Leafs or an Edmonton Oilers game by choice, but when it's the two of them, like, I can't not. As a hockey fan, how do you not?
And this early in the season, you expect goals and high scoring, whatever, and just, whew. I'll
say this about the Sens. They haven't been boring so far, which is good.
It's true.
So I'm very happy about that. Anything else NHL-wise that's kind of caught your eye so far in these early days of the season?
Well, I know we have a limited recording window here, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. But this week, Mike Babcock was back in the news. Pierre LeBrun wrote a pretty brutal puff piece. I don't want to get into the whole thing unless you do. But the one thing that did stand out to me was that he said in the interview that he... And I don't know whether he would have had a shot at it anyway, but he said, you know, the next time the NHL goes to the Olympics, which is scheduled to be the winter of 2022, he would not be the coach for Canada. So I was thinking back about it. This will be, whoever it's going to be, only the third coach in like 24 years to coach a men's best on best team for Canada. If you think Babcock was at the 2016 World Cup and then the 14 and 10 Olympics, Pat Quinn was the coach for Canada at the 06 Olympics, the 04 World Cup, and the 02 Olympics. And then you go back, obviously, it was Mark Crawford in 98. So since the 98 Olympics, there have been only two coaches to have worked with the Team Canada, you know, best on best staff. It's kind of wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's been like 24 years.
I mean, it makes sense because I feel like when Canada likes a coach,
yeah,
that's the guy.
Yeah. They like, just stick with it.
We are not touching anything with this management team. Like this is, that's the guy that's it, same with the GM, like nothing changes.
No.
So I'm not surprised, but I never actually gone back and looked. So that raises a good question.
Yeah.
Like next Olympics, if and when they do happen in 2022, mm-hmm. who do you think should be at the head coach?
See, I wanted to ask you that and now you've put me out there first. I've always liked Claude Julien. Although I know his stock seems to have fallen a little bit, maybe it's rising again here with the Habs. Joel Quenneville would be probably on that list. I don't know who else might be kind of in the mix for you as we kind of get maybe Dave Tippett. Like he's again, what he's doing right now with Edmonton isn't selling me a whole lot, but he's also working with what he's got. That typically seems to fall to somebody who's having success in that moment, right? When they hired Pat Quinn for the 02 team, the Leafs were pretty good. They were a conference final kind of team. They were always hanging around. When they brought in Babcock in 2010, he was fresh off a cup in Detroit, and they'd been good for a long time. I don't know who might be in the mix this time. What are your kind of thoughts on who might be next?
I think they go with someone like Barry Trotz.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I had to have this conversation with myself of, is Barry Trotz Canadian? Because I always associate him with he's only ever coached for American teams. So I always associate him with the States. But he's Canadian. And I think you put Barry Trotz at the head coaching position. I like Joe Quenneville, so I would definitely put him maybe at an assistant coach. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, why not Claude Julien? Like, he's been around for a long time. He's got a ton of respect, I think, at least, amongst the players. So yeah, I'd definitely go with one of either Barry Trotz or Joe Quenneville as a head coach. I would lean towards Barry Trotz just because he's had so much success in the last couple of years and he's known to be a player's coach. Like, people, the guys love him.
What about Cooper down in Tampa? Is he Canadian? Do you know?
That is a very good
question. Because I like him. Like, he's done a nice job with that team. It's got a bunch of stars. They finally got over the hump here this year. I wonder, and I don't know. I know he's got a law background, but he may be an American guy.
He's Canadian American, so he must have dual citizenship.
Okay. I don't know what that means then. And I know with the IIHF and the IOC, once you've done one in the past, you can't do the other. So if he has ever coached.
He's coached for Canada.
There you go. Then he'd be in the mix too. I like him on the staff somewhere too.
Hell yeah. I would replace Claude Julien with John Cooper.
There you go. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. That's a really great man. Look at us talking about the Olympics already. I hope they happen.
Yeah.
This is going to be a hard kind of switch of talk. I do want to say one more thing about the Mike Babcock situation. I know we don't want to spend too much time on it, but like, first of all, go look at Mike Commodore's thoughts on Mike Babcock always, because they're hilarious. And like you said, very subtle.
Yes.
I the one thing that
for
really
those not on Twitter, just to bring Mike Commodore at every turn since he has signed with Toronto, maybe before, but I know I started noticing it when Mike Babcock signed in Toronto. Mike Commodore, a player he used to play for him, a retired defenseman, just F this guy, worst human being in the world, like just tears him apart at every possible turn. So if you're not on Twitter and you don't know what Michaela's talking about, that's the deal, is this guy hates him.
Thank you for providing the context. It was needed. There were a number of, and I'm sorry, those are my dogs barking in the background. A number of complexities with this piece that, like, you know, I don't know exactly what was behind it, why it was written. But the one thing that really drove me nuts was that it had to be mentioned that Mike Babcock has done a lot of work for mental health initiatives. And Bella, let's talk today. You know, it's not a great mental health initiative causing PTSD amongst your players,
right?
Because you are so belligerent and aggressive with them. And if you want an example of that, go look at Johan Franzen and his experiences with Mike Babcock and how he talks about it.
He's afraid to get out of bed and go to work. Like the guy just bullied him and torched him. And you might be able to twist my arm into believing Babcock's side of the story on the Marner thing where, oh shit, it was just a momentary lapse. I fucked up and showed the list. It like his version of that story is different than what had been presented to the media earlier. He did nothing on the Franzen thing to swing me except paint himself as the victim, right? I'm hurt that he feels that way about me. Well, how about Franzen, right? Who's clearly had it much, much worse. And, you know, to try and paint yourself as the victim in that situation was, man, just completely tone deaf. And, you know, I'm hit and miss sometimes on Pierre LeBrun. I think he's a good reporter, but this was a puff piece trying to help out his buddy and make him look good before he debuts on TV for NBC as an analyst this weekend. It was a bad look. It was rough. And as you said, all that stuff about I've done work with mental health initiatives, and he has, but that doesn't change what you've clearly done to some of your players. And Chris Chelios is also another guy who stepped out and said, I've never seen a guy who treats his players the way that Mike Babcock did. So this isn't a one man, you know, this isn't just Johan Franzen who's said these things. You've got a few different guys who've come out and said, no, the way he treats his players is not okay.
Yeah. And that's like, it was just kind of proof to me that there are certain people who view the whole mental health in like any mental health initiative as purely PR. And then they don't back it. Like you have to back it up by actually caring about the mental health of people around you.
Yeah.
Right. You can hashtag Bell Let's Talk all you want. But if you're causing people serious mental distress and not showing any remorse or any redemption or repentance for it, you're doing no one any favors and you're contributing to the problem that these initiatives are trying to fight. Mm-hmm. It just drove me nuts. But that's really all you're right. The Mike Babcock thing is just, it's him trying to get out in the spotlight. Look, I'm innocent and all this stuff. And I got no time for it.
Yeah. And like, it's just bad journalism. Like I said, I don't want to pile on Pierre LeBrun, but if you're going to write a piece like that, it better have both sides. Like if you're going to try and put that out there, you better, you know, go to Johan Franzen for comment. And maybe he says, I don't want to comment, but it can't just be Babcock out there clearing his name. That's not your job as a journalist. Your job is to tell the story. And that's to me where sports journalists fall down a lot of the time is it's not journalism, it's storytelling. And those are very different things. Like if you want to claim to be a journalist, you better, you know, does Bozak agree that's how the Marner thing went down? Does Marner agree that's how that went down? Does, you know, Johan Franzen accept Mike Babcock's, you know, whatever. You got to do a deeper dive than that. This was just an open mic, essentially. Here's a, you know, a bullhorn. Tell the people what you want them to hear and we'll move along. And that's, it was not good.
Yeah, just a all around weird situation. But shifting gears a little bit from the NHL to the MLB, surprisingly, I know it's the dead of winter, but we have some actual Jays stuff to talk about. And like, I mean, actual Jays stuff, because the Jays did a thing.
Yeah.
They signed George effing Springer. He's a Blue Jay. $150 million contract, 6 years. Biggest free agent signing, I think, of the season.
So far, for sure.
So far, and aside from Hojin Ryu, definitely the biggest free agent signing for the Jays in the last couple of years.
biggest ever in franchise history. There was an exchange on Twitter where someone pointed out that this trumps the Vernon Wells contract, which I believe is $126 million. And Vernon said, "Hold my coffee, I'm coming back."
What were your thoughts on the signing and George Springer being a Blue Jay?
It's huge, right? It's huge. This is a guy who is in the conversation in terms of WAR, wins over replacement, right? With your Mike Trouts, right? He's a top four or five guy in the outfield. This is a 6-year contract for a 31-year-old center fielder. So you should count on after a couple years, that guy probably becoming a corner outfielder, but he hits like nobody's business. All his analytics, all his statistics suggest that he is easily a top 10 outfielder in Major League Baseball and, you know, a hitter who's going to come through. He can play right in the meat of your lineup if you want him to. He could lead off if you want him to. It kind of, you know, whatever they decide they need out of him in that situation. But he isn't quite at 31 what he once was defensively in center field, but he is miles better than anything else they have trotted out in center field in the last couple of years. So to me, this is a huge signing, maybe the biggest in franchise history, certainly financially, but just in terms of impact players. I know a lot of people don't know the name George Springer. If you're a casual fan, plays down in Houston and all these sorts of things, but this is a huge impact signing that will, you know, maybe it's him and Trevor Bauer that were the two biggest names on the free agent list this winter, and one of them has chosen to play Toronto. So to me, incredible.
That's just it. Is that a big free agent who obviously a number of teams were going after chose to play in Toronto? I think this does wonders for the Jays PR. That, you know, a year removed from when they signed Ho-Jin Ryu, kind of a similar situation. Mm-hmm. I think this does such great things for the Jays defense with a solid outfielder who can actually, like you said, this is miles above what they have right now.
Yep.
He's got amazing playoff statistics. And the commentary was this signing immediately makes the Jays a scary team.
Yeah.
And that tells you all you need to know about what George Springer brings to the Jays. I got to ask it, because it's obviously part of the conversation, but he was part of the 2017 Astros team in the sign-stealing scandal, yep. And he has admitted and apologized to his involvement in it.
Yep.
Does that sour you as a fan at all on this signing?
Sure. I'm not sure I'm running out to buy the Springer Blue Jays jersey, but his numbers, if you're worried about, and there's two different things here, right? There's the ethics of it, and then there's the, is he everything we want him to be? His numbers since 2017, when they got busted, right, or when this was happening, are better in 2018 and 2019 than they were in 2017. 2020 was a little odd, but he was fine, but he was better in both of those years following the cheating scandal than he was during it. The other thing is, while yes, he would have been involved in it, I have a much bigger issue I always have with the coaches and the GMs and the owner, like everybody who knew that this was going on and was pushing it, than with the players who I was just following orders is not a great excuse. And so that's why I do have questions about the guy's ethics a little bit in that regard. But I'm not prepared to pin the whole thing on him, right? And he is still an impact player, one of the best center fielders in baseball. As you said, he has admitted that he was a part of it. He has apologized. And there's lots of other guys out there, including the ones who ran the scandal, who have served their time and are now back in powerful positions around baseball. So it crossed my mind. It will again, no doubt. But at the same time, I think, you know, people deserve a second chance. And so here he is, a Toronto Blue Jay. And I'm certainly happy that they went ahead and did it. The opportunity to add a guy like this doesn't come around every day. And it'll come up again. But to me, it's sort of old news. Last year was supposed to be the whatever you want to call it, the tour of shame, right? Where they were going to go through all of Major League Baseball and get booed in every stadium that they visited. And then the pandemic struck, and lucky for them, the stadiums were empty and they didn't have to face any of that. So
that's the most unfair thing of 2020.
I know. We all wanted just that one time to boo all these guys and whatever. So there will be a segment of the fan base, I think, that that reminds him of it now and then, and the tweets stupid shit at him and this and that. But, you know, the Jays had to take this opportunity. The people don't line up to come to the Toronto Blue Jays, and so they got someone to do it, and to me it's huge. What is your thought on that? On the cheating thing?
My first question is, when is the conspiracy theory about the Houston Astros starting the COVID-19 pandemic going to start? But I kid, for the record, I'm kidding, just in case anybody needs to hear that. No, I'm with you. Like, his numbers after 2017 hold up. He was one part of this team. He was not the only one doing it. And by all accounts, he wasn't the ringleader of the situation, right? So listen, like, should he feel remorse? Absolutely. Has he shown remorse? Absolutely. People, I think everyone deserves the chance to earn, everyone deserves the opportunity to earn a second chance. And I say that because I do believe that second chances are earned. They're not given.
Yep.
And I think George Springer has showed that he deserves that second chance. He's earned it. He's worked towards it. He's showed remorse. He's apologized. There's a ton of stories out there on social media circulating about all the good things he's done with fans, interacting with young fans. And he seems like a guy who deserves the second chance. He's earned it.
They say that this is a guy you want in your clubhouse.
Exactly. And he deserves the chance to let fans make an opinion of him once he gets here.
Yep.
Right. Like, I said the same thing when DJ Smith was hired by the Sens. Everyone was so mad because he's a Leafs guy. And I was like, he deserves the chance to make you hate him for other reasons.
Right.
Like, let him come in and show what he can do here and then form your opinion of him. Don't form your opinion of him by what he did before, other than the fact that, you know, it should get you pretty excited based on the stats he's put up in the past and what the Jays need right now.
Well, they got two right now silver sluggers in the outfield, right? Teoscar Hernandez and what he did this past year. Now George Springer's won two of those in the past, or Springer. Like, to me, those are suddenly a very good outfield. And you have Goriel over on the in left field. Man, like, and I don't think they're done. Like, I don't think you do this. We'll talk about the bullpen, I guess, in a second. But I don't think you decide that one winter you're bringing in Ryu, the next winter you're bringing in Springer, and then you just hope for the best. I think they've clearly sent a message. We're going for it. We want to try and win. I don't know if that means you still can go get Bauer, although there's talk out there about that. I don't even know how bad I want them to go get Bauer. But that they're going to keep building here, right? Like, once you've committed this much, you've shown you're all in. And I think that's interesting because of the narrative that's been around Shapiro and Atkins since they've got here. They said there's work to be done. We have to rebuild the farm. We have to be financially responsible and build this back up. And when it's time, we'll spend. We will do that. And here we are. The last two winters, they've landed two of the biggest free agents available. So to me, they're vindicated a little bit, right? Because I've been one of those people who's been hard on those guys that I don't know if you're really what we need here. But here they are. They rebuilt the farm and got all these young prospects up and developed and some of them ready to actually play. And then they've gone out and landed two big fish. Man, I don't have a lot of ground to stand on in terms of saying that they haven't done exactly what they said they would do.
You're absolutely right. We were talking last week about Mark Shapiro re-signing for another 5 years and has he earned it and all this stuff. Well, he's now showing that they are doing exactly what they said they were going to do.
Yep.
Right? He and Ross Atkins are spending money when the time is right. Will you spend the money when you need to make this team a contender? Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Look at what they're doing. They're spending money. They're doing exactly what they said they were going to do. And you mentioned earlier, we should probably talk about some of the other signings. The Jays also brought in relievers Tyler Chatwood and Kirby Yates, which got a lot of people talking. What were your thoughts on that?
Chatwood is, it's funny, because one of the things that the management team said at the beginning of the offseason was, we need to bring in guys who throw strikes. And then they re-signed Robbie Ray and now brought in Chatwood, who are 4.3 and 4.7 walks per nine, respectively. They don't have great control. I thought Ray was better once he got here. So maybe they're hoping that Chatwood, under the thumb of Pete Walker and the pitching staff in Toronto, can get it under control a little bit. I liked that signing. They love his spin rate, and so if they can just get his control kind of worked out a little bit, they like that. Kirby Yates, to me, is exactly the type of risk that this team should be taking. Not great in 2020, had some injury issues there, but in 2019 and 2018 was a dominant bullpen arm. And I think that you take that chance, the coming off the injury. He'll be better again in 2021. Even if he's not going to close for you, you start to look at what that bullpen looks like now, especially at the back end with Romano worked in there as well. You know, I kind of like it. I think that's a great move. And the best part of it is it's almost entirely driven by performance. It's a $5.5 million base salary, which is totally fair for a guy like Kirby Yates, but with another $4.5 million in appearance bonuses, right? So if he's doing his thing and he's going in there in high leverage situations whenever they need him, he's going to get another, you know, $4.5 million out of that. That's how you get those guys to come and bet on themselves. And I love that move. How about you?
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. I think that, again, anything that can, beef up the Jays rotation overall. Like, I think they're in desperate need of that. And I think, I'll admit, I don't know a whole lot about Kirby Yates in terms of what he's done before he got here. So I had to do some research.
We didn't see a lot of him.
I had to do some research on the way in, but, you know, again, it's the youth aspect is huge. I think that what really stood, like the last 24 hours for the Jays have just been 48 hours, I guess we'll say at this point, have just been insane. And what the thing that was going around in my mind was, imagine what other high profile free agents are thinking of Toronto now, right? They got Hojin Ryu, they got George Springer, they've got some of the most, I guess, exciting young players on their roster.
Guerrero, Pearson, Bichette, all these guys.
Like, Goriel Jr., the list just goes on, right? Imagine what they can do now.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me really exciting.
Yeah, you've got people's attention, right? And you've shown that you're willing to spend and you're in it to contend. You know, winning begets winning, and all-stars want to play with other all-stars. And so I think they've absolutely shown here that they're in the mix and they want to contend, and they have people's attention for sure. So I really like what they've done, obviously. And I don't know that there's another like top of the pile all-star coming this offseason, but I don't think they're done. I do think they'll sign another piece or two here, even if it's bringing back just a guy like Taiwan Walker to help fill out the rotation or something like that. It'd be totally fine as well. So I think they'll stay on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to let your young guys become stars in and of themselves, right? And I think you got to leave some space for that. So even if the signings for the rest of the offseason are, you know, mid-level free agents and not the big superstars, I'm okay with that, right? Like, let Vladimir Guerrero Jr. mold into the superstar we all hope he becomes, right? So I'm really happy. I'm just really happy with what the Jays have done in the last 48 hours. And God, it makes me want to start spring training like now.
Exactly. Well, we're not that far off, right? We're only a few weeks away from pitchers supposedly, right? Reporting. Exactly. We'll see.
Then again, they're going to be in Florida for it. And Florida is as the office pointed out, a colorful, lawless swamp. And they're like nothing. The coronavirus, COVID isn't even happening there right now. Right. Like they're just living their life as though nothing is wrong. Sure. So I'm sure that will, hopefully the MLB will have some protocols in place. but I think that we're okay to at least assume that spring training will hopefully be okay as long as it's in Florida.
All these pro leagues seem to be just rolling on like nothing's happening anyway. So why would baseball be any different?
So before we wrap up, I have on that note, I have one question. All right. The Washington Capitals were fined $100,000 earlier this week for breaking COVID protocols. And from what we know, it was because four players hung out in a hotel room, including Alexander Ovechkin. I have a genuine question about this. I don't disagree with the NHL cracking down, but why can players not hang out together in a hotel room, but they can be on the ice and in the locker room, you know, hugging after goal celebrations and all this stuff without a mask? I don't get the difference between those two things.
Look, what the hell do I know? I think there's a lot of performative stuff happening here. I think it's a lot of optics that I do think in reality, you are trying to limit the risk, right? So you're spaced out in the locker room, you're not all sitting shoulder to shoulder like you used to be. Now you are on the bench, and like you said, you're hugging and celebrating after goals and all these things. But if you could limit it after that and just stay in your own hotel rooms, maybe you are limiting the times that it could pass. At the same time, as you've said, once everybody's in the same place at the same time, you know, to go, yeah, it's fine here, but it's not fine over there in the hotel, is a little silly. But those are the rules. And to see that the Capitals are now going to be without Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Orlov, and Samsonov for at least four games, you're talking about your starting goalie, no worse than your number two defenseman, your number one center, and your captain for... They're not screwing around, right? And I do admire the NHL for enforcing it, even if you do think it's a little hypocritical, and I've been back and forth on it. I do understand the idea that just lets... You have to be together in the locker room and on the bench. You don't have to be anywhere else. So, you know, limit exposure where you can, I guess. I am happy that they're making an example of somebody in the hopes that as we move forward, you know, maybe other teams go, oh, shit, right? Like we just lost our entire top power play unit or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You don't do it again. But you're right. It does look a little silly.
And I want to be very clear. I'm not necessarily challenging the NHL and what they did. I do agree that you have to set an example, mm-hmm. and you have to not just show your other players and teams and management, but you have to show the public that you're taking this seriously and that they too should not be gathering in groups of, you know, four, sure, five, six, exactly. Whatever. I'm wondering if I'm missing something. Like,
I don't think there's any difference in terms of the level of risk or anything. It's just limiting the times you do it, right? Yeah. And if we have to be together,
I imagine they test, yep. You know, as they're coming into. I think they test before each game, right? And as they're coming into the facility, so maybe it's a more controlled environment because they're being tested.
Could be.
I just like that was all I could think of. I was like, why? Why is it okay on the ice, and then why are coaches the only ones wearing masks, even though keep taking them off?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm still just trying to figure all this out, and I think everyone's kind of the same.
Yeah,
regardless, I think the Washington Capitals are having some regrets
but man, did they get whacked, right? Like those are four impact players. Like
the money's one thing.
Like Austin Matthews, $100,000 to Ted Leonsis and the Capitals is nothing, but Austin Matthews, if you're gonna break the rules here and have to sit out four games, hang out with some losers. Do not hang out with Marner and Nylander and whatever. You better be hanging out with like the taxi squad, because we can't
Out with Rasmus Sandin.
Poor Rasmus.
No offense to Rasmus. Yeah,
exactly, right? A low-end guy. Do not be having the whole number one power play unit hanging out in your hotel.
No, ill-advisable.
Right.
All that is to say, Washington Capitals have learned from their mistakes. Hopefully other people have.
We'll see. Yeah.
As well. I think we should wrap things up, Matt, unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about.
No, that was it. I think this is a good one, and we managed to keep it under a good time. I would tee up on Saturday, McGregor versus Poirier, UFC 257. I'm looking forward to that one. It's going to be awesome. And on Wednesday morning, so Rob will be here for the usual Monday morning show. On Wednesday, Kevin Mickey from Sportsnet is going to be on with me, and we're going to talk about that UFC 257 card, McGregor versus Poirier. It's going to be big. And also tee up the WWE Royal Rumble. Kevin Mickey is Sportsnet's wrestling guy, so we're going to talk a little wrestling there as well. And then the week after that, somebody I know you know quite well, Michaela, as well. John Rodenberg from TSN 1200 here in Ottawa is going to be on the show for the Wednesday morning of Super Bowl week. I believe that's the 3rd of February. So a couple, couple good guests JR. Coming up. Exactly.
That's awesome. He's a great guy.
For
sure. Really glad you got him on. Before we go, I want to get your thoughts on the Sprokvik.
Yes, is that what we called Sprokvik. It? Pretty good. They weren't lying. It's light, but it's not unpleasant light. Like it has some flavor to it. It's a little dry, maybe a little drier than I would have expected, but I did enjoy it to the point where I'm on to my second one as we're sitting here talking. So,
then it was terrible.
Exactly. Right. So no, I did. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Do they classify it as a Nordic lager or something like that?
Yeah. This is a Norwegian lager, I believe is what they called it. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I remember thinking like, yeah, it has that kind of Eastern European,
right?
Or Northern European. Geography was not my specialty.
They're calling it Central European, so why don't we ride with them?
There we go, Central European. It's European. Clearly, I know where Europe is, but they make good beer.
All tucked away down there.
Most of Europe. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Hitting the nail on the head from Ridge Rock, because they do that so often. All right, we will wrap things up here. Thank you all so much for listening. As always, you can find Tall Can Audio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You can find me on Twitter at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S. We'll see you next time on Tall Can Audio.
See ya.
It is over!
Now that's a tasty beverage.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.